Welcome to the best of the PW Torch Daily Cast for Sunday, August 17th, 2025. Today, we're jumping back 5 years to Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks and Ryan Sullivan from PW Torch. And they previewed that year's COVID SummerSlam event and NXT TakeOver 30. Plus, a discussion of ROH, which was Ryan Sullivan's beat, AEW, and more for over an hour and a half. They answered email questions and caller questions about Retribution, the timing of WWE's Payback pay-per-view, New Japan heels, and more. So let's get to it. This originally live-streamed 5 years ago this weekend, and it is today's Best of PW Torch Daily Cast. Here we go.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for August 16th, 2020. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks coming at you as we do each and every Sunday night for Wrestling Night in America. Coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to have pay-per-view after pay-per-view because next Sunday is SummerSlam. We'll do a full preview of that show as well as TakeOver 30 here tonight. Next week, however, you can find us on the air for Wrestling Night in America. As soon as SummerSlam goes off the air on the WWE Network, we'll go on the air taking your calls, 515-605-9345, and your emails, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We'll cover SummerSlam and we'll cover TakeOver. So if you have any thoughts or comments or questions about either one of those shows, make sure to get a hold of us next Sunday night. And then the week after that, WWE is doing the rare back-to-back pay-per-views. Payback will be featured on August 30th, so it'll be the same schedule as it will be next week, where as soon as Payback goes off the air, we'll go on the air here on Wrestling Night in America, taking your thoughts and opinions on that show. As for tonight, I'm happy to welcome a first-time co-host to Wrestling Night in America here from the PWTorch.com family. Ryan Sullivan is with us. Ryan, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Hey, Greg. Thank you so much for the invite. I'm a big fan of the show, and what a treat it is to actually be in the analyst chair. So thank you so much.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Love to have you here. I know you've done some post-show work with Wade Keller in the past, so no stranger to PW Torch Audio, and I know you do audio for Ring of Honor as well. But I do want to talk a few things about Ring of Honor a little later on, since I know that's your wheelhouse. But let's start with TakeOver coming up next Saturday night on the WWE Network. A couple matches announced so far. So still room for one or two more matches to be announced, and obviously the ladder match for the North American title. All the participants still have to be settled for that. We'll look forward to that happening on NXT television this Wednesday. But so far, we have, starting off with that exact ladder match, Bronson Reed versus Damian Priest versus Cameron Grimes versus either Johnny Gargano or Ridge Holland and either Finn Balor or Velveteen Dream. So this is kind of a ladder match, it seems to me, Ryan, where a lot of the old guard is not involved. So it looks like NXT's idea is to use the North American Championship as sort of a stepping stone to bigger and better things. I mean, you got a guy like Bronson Reed, who's certainly trending upward. Damian Priest, I think, has kind of hit a wall a little bit since he's turned babyface, actually. Cameron Grimes, who's working his way up the card, and we'll have to see what develops out of the next two matches on Wednesday to determine the final two participants. But do you get that same sense that they could have put some more established stars in here? Are they looking at the North American title to use as that stepping stone, sort of like the Intercontinental title belt used to be in WWE?
Yeah, that's the first thing that jumped out to me is that they've really done a great job of building Bronson Reed in the last, 3 or 4 weeks. And, for the longest time, he was languishing in the mid-card on NXT. And now all of a sudden, with that terrific appearance or that three-way match with Gargano and, of course, I'm blanking on the other name. And then, his recent wins, Bronson Reed looks like he's really moving up the card. Damian Priest, like you said, has languished a little bit, but he certainly feels like he could be next in line as the next big man to have his title. And we all know that it's Bruce Mitchell's favorite, but, Cameron Grimes has done a nice job and he could be, that dark horse. He would be a nice heel champion to have, and that would help push him up the card and establish his character a bit more. And it's hard to see Johnny Gargano not on a takeover card. So you got to think he's going to be in there. But then, like you say, I mean, they've been trying to take the next step. So maybe Ridge Holland will get a surprise victory. And, you know, Lord knows what's going to happen with Finn Balor and Velveteen Dream. And we can touch on that or not. But, you know, so it's definitely the changing of the guard and definitely the next wave of NXT talent.
What did you think about the way that the North American title became free? Keith Lee, they made a lot about him becoming a double champion, defeating Adam Cole, holding two belts, and they only ended up doing that for about a week or two before he gave up the North American title. It was done in a very magnanimous way by Keith Lee because he wanted someone else to have the opportunity to hold a championship. He knew how important that was to his career, and he wanted to do that for another wrestler on the NXT roster. But you know, there's a certain part of you that also thinks, well, he worked so hard to become double champion to just give one of them up. There must have been more creative ways to get that title off of him, or were you okay with the way it was framed?
I didn't love the way that it went down, but on the other hand, I think it was the best of the way they could have handled this. I mean, I don't think having him lose the North American title as the champion would make sense. That doesn't particularly work well, and you know, if he just immediately gave it up, I don't think that works great either. So I think it was the best of a bad situation in a lot of ways, and at least it made him continue to look like the babyface that they wanted them to. So, you know, I saw it, just to use Ring of Honor as an example, I saw with Jay Lethal having their TV title and their Reign champion and holding them both. It did not work great, in my opinion. So I think this was the best way that they could book this.
Yeah, you would definitely want to get that title off of him, and you wouldn't even need to do it immediately. You could have him hold two titles for a while. We're seeing that with Bayley and Sasha Banks. You know, you would have to get creative because you don't really want to have your champion, your main champion, seem all that vulnerable, especially a guy like Keith Lee, who he's not, I wouldn't say he's an established guy, so you've got to be careful with someone at that level who's still trending upward, and you don't want to trip them up by having them lose as champion and kind of come across as a weak NXT champion. So it would have to be massaged in a way to not make Keith Lee look like a paper NXT champion by virtue of having lost the North American championship. And I'm not sure how that would be done, but I'm not on NXT creative, so I guess I don't have to worry about coming up with the plans for that. You mentioned Finn Balor and Velveteen Dream. So, you know, two big names within the NXT environment here. Only one of them is going to advance. I think you could argue both of them need this win. Finn Balor returned to NXT from the main roster with a lot of momentum. He seemed like a big fish in a small pond for a while, but then he's been lost in the shuffle a little bit. Velveteen Dream has been off TV since he lost to Adam Cole in the NXT version of the Backlot Brawl from WrestleMania many years ago. And, you know, then he lost in his return match in that triple threat on Wednesday. So, you know, obviously concerns involving Velveteen Dream as far as, you know, why he was taken off TV originally and some things that had come out. I don't know if his return to TV means WWE has cleared him from accusations that have been made against him. But who do you feel needs this spot more, Finn Balor or Velveteen Dream?
I think Dream needs it more because I think Finn is a bit more you know, Teflon and bulletproof, but, you know, Finn, I mean, these are two guys that have probably had as bad a pandemic run as anybody in NXT. I mean, you know, obviously we've referred to the Dream stuff, you know, outside the ring, but I mean, neither one of these guys have had a particularly good run. I mean, Finn's character feels very flat. And even when Velveteen was wrestling, even leading into the Adam Cole match, it didn't feel like that was a particularly big buildup. So,
right.
As you alluded to, I think both of these guys need it. I think Dream needs it more, but I think they probably have Finn go over here and really make the point to Velveteen would be my guess. But I could see it going either way.
Moving on to the women's championship match, Io Shirai versus Dakota Kai. And NXT really has You know, they're bordering on an embarrassment of riches in their women's division and have been for a while now. You know, there's a lot of women in there. And you know, even Friday night on SmackDown, a couple of them got an opportunity with Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Nox in that multi-brand battle royal. They weren't just in there as fodder. They threw out Raw and SmackDown superstars in that match. So a little notch in their belt as well. But Dakota Kai, Io Shirai, Kai's been doing a lot of great work since she turned heel. She doesn't have Raquel Gonzalez with her right now. Likely a COVID-related absence. Not saying she has it, but it, it you know, the timing of it seems that she's off TV for that reason. You know, Shirai, I feel like they could do more with her, strangely enough, as champion. The focus almost as with her as champion seems to be on almost everybody else in the division. And again, you know, you have to kind of share that spotlight when you have as deep and talented women's division as NXT does. But do you see Dakota Kai being able to knock off Shirai here?
I feel like Io Shirai is like the Randy Orton of NXT. I mean, I just feel like she is such a notch level than everybody else in the division. And I don't say that as a knock against the other women, more just as a compliment. But I think Io is one of the best, you know, maybe 5 or 10 wrestlers, man or woman, in the entire planet. So I think that I could see Dakota winning this. I would feel a lot more comfortable about making that prediction if Raquel was around, because she feels a lot more like an equalizer. But I really feel like they, and to your point, I do feel like they should be doing a lot more with Io. I mean, she is just such a talent, but that said, she is the champion and I think she should go over here, but I could see a scenario where they try to let Dakota Kai win, but it sure seems unlikely.
Here's how polarizing Randy Orton is. When you compared Io Shirai to Orton before you said what that comparison was, I was like, boy, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because there are a lot of different opinions on Randy Orton out there, so I didn't know which way you were going to go with that.
Well, and I'm one of the low men on Randy Orton. I'm not his biggest fan, but I think Io is just so smooth and so talented. We sometimes forget how good she is, sometimes like we do about Randy as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, given the depth of the women's roster, whether Io Shirai or Dakota Kai wins, if you were in charge of NXT, presuming this is a one-off match and Kai goes to the back of the line or wherever, who do you have your eye on in NXT amongst the women who you think is deserving and is ready for that next title shot?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, you know, I'll throw a curveball, but I would love to see them push little Casey Campanzaro. There's just something about her as a likable babyface that I think that would work. And that's probably way off the board, but that is somebody that I think could really get the crowd going in a like a Candice LeRae, and that's another name as well. You know, just kind of the lovable underdog. Yeah. But I still think there's talent there, and I'd like to see her get a push at some point.
So let's talk Adam Cole and Pat McAfee. This is one of those feuds that has a lot of fans a little disjointed here, and I think part of it is fans embraced NXT for everything it was everything WWE that it wasn't. You know, anything you saw on Raw and SmackDown, NXT was praised by a certain group of fans for doing the opposite. You know, they fans may have been WWE fans. People may have wanted to be WWE fans, but they just couldn't stomach what they were seeing on Raw and SmackDown. So NXT was kind of their breath of fresh air. You know, they could still be involved in the product by watching NXT, you know, before AEW came along and all that. And here we have a feud that feels main roster-ish. You know, you take a celebrity, you bring them in, you have them wrestle. It's something WWE has done a lot over the last 20, 30 years. And so I think the backlash is that it's almost like, no, you're getting WWE in my NXT. And people don't like that because they don't like that main product. And they want NXT to be different from that. All that being said, my issue with this, and I've kind of brought this up before, is I don't mind doing Pat McAfee in here. He's got a grading enough personality that he can come across as a heel. He's a former athlete, so, you know, with the proper training, you can kind of conceive of him being somewhat competent in the ring. But against a guy like Adam Cole, who just came off a year-plus run as your champion, that's a tough pill for me to swallow as an Adam Cole fan, that this is the best they can do after it. And I know, you know, you can make the argument they want to turn Adam Cole heel and they're using Pat McAfee to do it or what have you, but I don't feel like it's a really inspired choice for a follow-up to Adam Cole's big NXT title run.
To your point, this just feels like a lose-lose all the way around for Adam Cole. So rarely in WWE do we ever see a celebrity come in and do they lose a match. So right off the bat, it's going to make Cole lose terrible if he loses. But if he wins, he's beating a non-athlete or a non-wrestler in a wrestling match. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't look good. Pat McAfee, yes, he's a former punter, but he was a pro athlete. And he's a big man. It's going to make Adam Cole look very small in the ring comparison-wise, which is something that we shouldn't be highlighting as that's the only real negative in Adam Cole's entire profile. So I feel like this is just and they can't possibly have a good match. I mean, Pat McAfee's never stepped in a wrestling ring. So I don't know how this comes off well for Adam. Like you say, I mean, it might help the heel turn, but I don't know how this is productive for in any way, shape, or form long term.
And as much as I'm kind of against in principle this match happening, I thought the first week to kick it off, where McAfee, I say kick it off, pun intended, I suppose, where McAfee punted Adam Cole while he was splayed out on the announce table, I thought that was pretty effective. I didn't think the follow-up last week was as good. I think the first week set the table for Adam Cole's babyface turn, but I thought last week undid some of that, and he came across more as a heel. And then, you know, if you believe that, then you step back and say, okay, what are we doing here? If we're not using this to turn Cole heel or turn Cole babyface, and he's going to come out of this still as a heel, then like, what was the entire point of it? So, you know, that's where my frustration lies. I think I have a little higher expectation than you do in this, because if there is any wrestler on the NXT roster who has the possibility of getting a good match out of Pat McAfee, it would be Adam Cole, just because of how talented he is. We don't know what kind of match it's going to be, and I don't know if McAfee's going to be going for drop toe holds and, you know, short arm scissors or anything like that, or if it's going to be a brawl, which you would expect with someone with as limited training as McAfee is. And, you know, there could be a stipulation that NXT pops up in this match on Wednesday night. But, you know, I think given the 2 weeks, one has been positive in my mind and one has been negative, I think this week's TV is going to be really key for how a lot of people view this match going into Saturday night.
You took the words out of my mouth. Perfectly well said, because I feel like I don't know where this is going in the direction. Like you said, 1 week he's a face, 1 week he's heelish. So I hope we learn a lot going into this week. I can't really add anything more to it.
Yeah. The main event, Keith Lee versus Karrion Kross. NXT Championship match. You know, I think this is a really big match for both of these guys. Keith Lee, his first takeover as NXT champion, he's going to want a lot. He's going to have a lot to prove as far as, you know, cementing in the decision makers of NXT's mind that he was the right choice. And Karrion Kross, I mean, we've seen him in limited action in the ring. His positives were always the character work in the interviews. You know, he was always a guy who was just kind of – who was good in the ring, but not the blow-away kind of stuff that we are used to seeing from NXT main events. So I think he's going to have a lot to prove, too. You know, can he go into a main event in NXT TakeOver and have a lengthy NXT title match and not look out of place? So, you know, I think they've done a nice job with Karrion Kross's character to this point, but now, you know, we're going to see what he has to offer in the ring against a quality opponent in Keith Lee.
Yeah, to your point, I think they've done a fantastic job building both to this match. I could have done a little bit without the fireball on Wednesday night, but nonetheless, I mean, Karrion Kross has been built like an absolute monster in the last, I don't know, 6 weeks or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so is Keith Lee, and you completely understand why Keith wants to get retribution, bad pun intended, for, you know, Dominic Dijakovic's injury and having that go in front of him. And it's been built up perfectly well, but I'm worried where this match goes. I mean, Keith Lee has had some great matches, but he's also had some underwhelming matches at times. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big Karrion Kross fan in the ring.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm more in the Wade camp probably than even you were the other day when you were having that conversation. So I'm worried this isn't going to be a great match, and I don't know what they do. I mean, if Kross loses, that really crushes his momentum, and I don't know where he goes from there. But if Keith Lee loses, unless you're sending him to the main roster, I don't know what you do with Keith at that point either. So
right.
This is one of those times where it's great to be a wrestling fan because I don't know what they're going to do. But I don't know that it's a good choice either time. I feel like it's more of they've got two bad choices that they're going to make. But I'm excited to see how they go. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, unfortunately, when you get a situation like this where, and we've discussed it on this show before with other matches and other pay-per-views, is, you know, I don't really know what direction they're going to go with this finish. You know, neither can really afford a loss. And what we end up seeing are some really, really bad finishes like we saw on the last WWE pay-per-view. So that's my concern out of it is they see it the same way you see it, Ryan, but instead of trying to come up with a finish that's decisive one way or the other, or in the very least satisfying, they will do something. They will try to get quote unquote creative and have a finish that is nonsensical or unsatisfying. And I talked at the very beginning about WWE sort of, or at the last match rather, about WWE booking tendencies creeping into NXT. And I think the finishes on this show are going to tell us a lot about what kind of WWE main roster creative influence is currently infesting NXT's creative.
Yeah, that's a great point. We've seen a lot more screwjob finishes and distraction finishes in the last few months, certainly since this pandemic has started, than we ever saw, you know, in last year or years before.
Mm-hmm. Want to get to an email question before we get to the calls. You can call us 515-605-9345 if you'd like to talk SummerSlam or TakeOver. And, of course, you can email us anytime, wnialivecast@gmail.com. I always give out the same scenario. If you're watching, for example, next weekend, if you're watching TakeOver, if you're watching SummerSlam, and you know you're not going to be able to stay up late and call into the SummerSlam post show next Sunday night, and feel free to email us. We'll take your email on that show. That's my promise to you. We get to each and every email every week. So this is the second question that Roy from California has. He has another one that we'll get to later. He says, while I'm fine with no fans, I know the majority prefer watching wrestling shows with fans. The NBA has done virtual fans with mixed results, but it makes the court feel somewhat of a home court for the home team. Do you think that's something WWE or AEW could adopt? Why or why not? So to me, Ryan, and I don't know, maybe you feel differently about this, I think we've kind of passed the point of virtual fans. I think that would have been something that you did at the very outset of this pandemic to make up for having no fans. And if you anyone listened to the Wade Keller Torch Talk with Krista Joseph, former WWE creative team member that dropped the other day, really insightful 90 minutes about what it's like being a creative team member and being a producer during the COVID era. I think this is the first real full-length, you know, interview that from someone backstage during this time. And he talked about the different scenarios that WWE was thinking up as to how to liven up the shows without live crowds. And, you know, having fans there in some sort, whether it's the virtual reality or whatever, was a consideration. But, you know, I think for the time being, Ryan, they've hit on what they can do best. Part of it is because they can control it. You know, if you have fans who, you know, zoom in or whatever like that, you can't control their reactions, whereas you're in a little bit more of a controlled environment, and it's a little closer to reality, and it's a little closer to normal, quote unquote, with the NXT trainees, as opposed to having virtual fans, which may be a little awkward and may be a little outside the price that WWE is willing to pay or AEW is willing to pay to do that. I don't think you gain enough by doing virtual fans versus what they're doing now to make the price point worth it.
Well, I completely agree with you. I just don't see any scenario where Vince is not going to be controlling what's going on with the fan base and the fan reactions. For one, I don't think he wants fans trying to get themselves over while the show's going on, too. So I just don't think it works. And I also think, like you kind of alluded to, we're too far down the road. We've had, you know, the trainees now for, I don't know, 3 months. All these weeks blend together, but it's been a long time now. So I think it would feel very shocking and have a negative effect if all of a sudden they were having screens of you know, fans sitting on their couch at home. It would be, I think it would almost have a negative effect of jarring and reminding us of just, you know, what we're doing and what's going on in the world.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's go to the phones. 814 area code, it's Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. First up tonight, Ryan, good to talk to you again this week. What's on your mind tonight? Your first question for us.
First question is an article I saw on the Bleacher Report today. It said that Wrestling Observer was reporting that virtually all wrestlers except Prim and Reigns were contacting AEW. That doesn't seem to be make sense to me, because I don't feel like why Drew McIntyre or people that wouldn't even fit in with the promotion, say like Bray Wyatt, would be interested in joining AEW.
Yeah, I didn't see that report, but that just that has that clickbaity type headline to it. So I've actually literally just brought it up on my phone. Wrestling Observer reported that, quote-unquote, virtually everybody, as Ryan said, on WWE's active roster has made preliminary contact with AEW. So, you know, there are a lot of guys who are under contract for a long time in WWE. They've, you know, a lot of the guys that they are re-signing, especially since AEW stepped forward as a company, are five-year deals. So the idea that they're going to somehow get out of these five-year deals to go to AEW is just unrealistic. You know, if there are people who maybe are at the end of their contract or it's coming due, you know, maybe then you send feelers, because that's just, you know, as a person who's trying to make the most money that they can in the business, I mean, that why wouldn't you do that? A lot of people are probably going to read Ryan into this that there's a lot of unrest in WWE, but you know, without hearing the full context of Dave Meltzer's thoughts on this and his reporting on this, I'm skeptical to give it too much weight.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, you know, act like I'm skeptical of Dave Meltzer. He's done great work, so I don't want it to sound like that. But that sounds more like a there's just so many friends that are so many people that have worked in WWE that are now in AEW, and people are friends. I mean, you don't lose your friends in any business, and I'm sure that the wrestlers are asking their friends, hey, what kind of deals are you getting? I mean, yeah. I'm sure people are asking what the Revival-type numbers are getting and what Sean Spears is getting and some of those numbers, so, and what Brody Lee got. So, I mean, you're only human. I'm sure you want to know what kind of salaries are going on at rival companies, but I don't know that that means it's a mass exodus more than just a, you know, business venture. You know, hey, what are the guys at PW Insider making, or what are the guys at, you know, some other company? I take it more as that than I do, you know, this mass exodus, because I if I'm just thinking of it as a wrestler, I would feel a lot more comfortable with WWE's balance sheet right now than I would AEW's.
Yeah. Ryan, back to you for your second question for us.
Yeah, second question's on this new group, Retribution. These mass wrestlers, do you think the leader will be? I heard a rumor that Sheamus could be the leader, but have you heard of someone else maybe being the leader of this organization?
I've not heard anything about not only a leader, but who's going to be involved, period, in this, Ryan. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of mass wrestlers, which allows WWE to you know, sort of change midstream. They are not married to any one person or group being a part of Retribution. So when the reveal is done, yeah, and they may be just kind of making it up as they go along, using NXT trainees as part of Retribution for now until they decide who they want for sure to be a part of the group. But what's your thoughts on it a couple weeks in here? Do you think that the leader is going to be, you know, coming from inside WWE, or is it going to be a true outside group, or maybe it's even an NXT top talent, a way to introduce them as the leader of this group?
Yeah, that's what I'm starting to lean as, is this feels like the second wave of Nexus to me.
Uh-huh.
Is particularly this week when there were 10 or 15 or 20 men and women that were part of the group. I mean, this is starting to feel like maybe it's an NXT takeover type, pardon the pun, but maybe the retribution is the fact that the Raw and SmackDown superstars have come into their arena and used their building for the shows. Maybe that's what they're getting retribution for. Just a complete thought off the top of my head, but I'm starting to think that that's what it is, and there's a leader that's somebody that they're bringing in, because the only way that they would put this much amount of time in it is if they had something big planned. So, I mean, we always throw out CM Punk, and you know, that feels a little foolish, and this doesn't necessarily fit him. But it feels like something where they're bringing a big name to try to be the leader of this.
And, Ryan, your third question for us tonight.
Final question is on this virtual fan idea that they're going to use for future shows. How do you think WWE's screen that to make sure that someone undesirable doesn't like show up on screen? Like, people implied that maybe someone might try to sneak like Chris Benoit or some other person that they don't want on television.
And I think that's, you know, part of the difficulty with this, Ryan, that we alluded to is a lot of this would be out of Vince's control, because these are people, you know, maybe sitting at home watching on TV, you know, or watching it being put on screen through their computer. So how do you control that aspect of it? You would have to have fans that you know, some of the fans they let into the building in the first place when they got in trouble very quickly after that, when all of the positive tests started coming out. You know, it would have to be the people that they trust. It couldn't just be, you know, you win a lottery on WWE.com to be on the audience. I just don't think that's a way you could do it. And the other point that Krista Joseph brought up in that interview with Wade Keller is a lot of the stuff they're doing taped now. So, you know, doing it taped does not really allow for people to be watching at home as it's airing and reacting to things. So they're going back live, at least for the time being. With SummerSlam and everything else at the Amway Arena in Orlando. So this would be an opportunity, although being in a bigger venue, I think it would make it hard to use NXT talent as fans again, because, you know, it's one thing to do it in the Performance Center where it's a very small setting, but to take that same number and try to disperse them in the crowd, I don't know how you make that look good. So maybe I know Michael Cole teased fan involvement at SummerSlam and perhaps going forward. So given the fact that they're getting out of the Performance Center, I think it makes it a little more, I guess, a likely scenario that they try something like that.
When you put it that way, I mean, maybe it's more likely. I go back to the answer I had earlier. I don't see Vince giving up that much control and letting the possibility of anything happening. I mean, at the end of the day, he can control what the trainees are doing in, you know, the NXT, you know, in Full Sail. But
yeah,
all of a sudden you start letting, you know, real people start reacting. And like Ryan said, you know, they can put mentions you don't want. They can start, you know, pushing their websites you don't want, or you know, just a number of other things that you wouldn't possibly want. So I don't, for the minimal benefit it would be, there's so many negatives, but I don't know what they're going to do moving to Amway. I mean, you make a great point to that, and I'm kind of stumped onto what they're going to do.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out at SummerSlam, because I believe TakeOver is still going to be from the Performance Center. So we'll get our first look at the setup at SummerSlam and how they plan on doing that. So we'll have to see you, Ryan. Thank you for the call, as always, this week.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
And since Ryan mentioned retribution, that brings me to another email question. This from Jack, Jack A. in Swansea, Wales. He says, my question is about retribution. I think they've looked like a bunch of school children running around on Halloween night. After SmackDown this week, seeing them with more members and a lot bigger people in the group, they seemed a lot more threatening in my eyes. I've seen Ciampa and Dijakovic as the heavily rumored leaders of this stable. I think they'd be good choices. I also feel like I've seen Carmella in and around this and Chelsea Green, two people I wouldn't expect to be in an angle like this. A bigger improvement on SmackDown anyway. Have you got any clues as to who's involved and what the reasoning is behind this all? Seems to involve Big E a lot, which I didn't quite get. Is this playing into current events? And is Big E going to be the face who goes after them? Love Big E. So still a lot of unknowns. Some of the similar questions that Ryan raised. I don't know if we can read into who they're going after or if they're just trying to sow chaos. I mean, that seems like the overall overarching theme. That more than anything, this retribution group is just trying to sow chaos. I don't know that they're going after one particular person, but Ciampa's an interesting idea of someone who could lead the group. Dijakovic is someone interesting to lead the group. I think whoever, as rough of a start as this has gotten off to, Ryan, I think whoever they decide to have be the leader, if they come from NXT, I think that's an instant credibility gainer for that person.
Absolutely. And to the emailer's point, it did seem to take on a lot bigger people. The first couple of weeks, it seemed like very, very small individuals and non-threatening, you know, men and women. And this time it definitely seemed like there were a lot bigger, a lot more physically imposing. And I agree with you. Whoever gets this slot, I mean, they put a lot of time into it. Obviously, it's going to be part of SummerSlam in some way, shape, or form. So I would assume that the leader gets revealed at SummerSlam. And I think, like you say, I mean, obviously it's similar to Brody Lee in AEW with the Dark Order. I mean, it's got to be a big faction, and it's got to be a big part of the upper mid-card. I mean, at least, I mean, at a very minimum, if you don't push it farther than that. I mean, it's the new stable, and it's absolutely, it's got to be a lot of people, and it's going to be WWE versus them. So.
Yeah, I think we'll learn a lot about how WWE views this group in the next few weeks. You know, if they start to kind of peter off, is this just WWE's way? Because it felt very much like the way it was situated on SmackDown, very much in the especially in the second hour there, a way to get you to tune in and to stay tuned in. And is it anything beyond that? Is it anything beyond a cheap way to get fans to tune in and to stay tuned in to SmackDown and Raw? Or is this really, you know, WWE has a big idea for a long-term storyline on introducing multiple major characters? And I think that's the hope that a lot of people have. But we've seen groups like this not have the success that it seemed they were destined to have when they immediately debuted. So something to keep an eye on going forward with how WWE treats it. Moving on to SummerSlam, which is Sunday night. We'll take a look at this card. The Street Profits versus Andrade and Angel Garza for the Raw Tag Team titles. I had a problem with the way this was built initially, with Andrade and Garza losing to the Street Profits 1 week, and the very next week they win a match to be able to face the Street Profits. So, you know, your typical 50-50 booking, which I guess is good in one sense because I don't have a strong feeling either way on the way this match could go, but also bad because no one really gets over because of it. So I almost think, Ryan, this is more about Bianca Belair and Zelina Vega on the outside. I think I have just as much interest in their involvement and what they do as I have with the Street Profits versus Andrade and Garza.
Yeah, completely. I feel like I've seen this match far too many times, and like you say, the most interesting part of this is what's going to happen with Bianca and Zelina and who poisoned Montez, and if we get that resolution. So I'm with you. This, I mean, obviously it's going to be a great match. I mean, they're, you know, four great workers, so it should be a fun, you know, fun to watch. Yeah. But I'm assuming the outside interference will be, you know, cause the victory.
One thing we have to keep an eye on, there has been no match announced on this show that is a slam dunk cinematic match. And WWE has been doing a cinematic match at every pay-per-view. Dominic versus Seth Rollins in the street fight, I think, could be one that they do cinematically. Let's take a moment and talk about that. And mostly I think that because they might want to hide Dominic's shortcomings at this point in his wrestling training, and doing it in a street fight and in a cinematic way could do that. The beating that Dominic took this past week on Raw was quite uncomfortable, and it was especially uncomfortable watching with my girlfriend, who's not a wrestling fan and who's just kind of – I'm easing her into watching wrestling, and she was very I won't say put off, but she, you know, she made mention that, hey, that looks like it really hurts, and when you saw the welts and things afterward, it certainly did.
It's funny you say that. My wife was the same way when I was watching. So yeah, I agree with you. It's the same, very similarly.
Do you have a feeling that this could end up being the cinematic match on this show, or, you know, do you see the street fight stipulation as just a way to work around Dominic's unpolished nature at this stage of his career?
I think if there's one match, I mean, I guess they could try to do some cinematic stuff with Braun and the Fiend, as they always do. But this one, it does, like you said, seems to be the one where some cinematic help would be very worthwhile. I mean, this is no shot at Dominic, but I don't think he's ever wrestled a match. And then he's going to be at SummerSlam with Seth Rollins. I mean, that's a hell of an order. I don't care who you are. So I think the ability to have, you know, toys, as they call them, or weapons, and then being able to hit start and stop would be a great help in this match, because I don't know what they do. I mean, after you beat Dominic down as much as they did, you kind of think he needs to get his retribution and a win at SummerSlam. But how do you have Dominic go over one of the top three guys in the company in Seth Rollins? I mean, again, I find I don't know where they're going to go with the match outcome here.
Do you see Ray getting involved in the finish of this one at all?
I think either him or Aleister Black. I mean, the story just doesn't make any sense, a straight up one-on-one match. I don't think anybody's believing that Dominic's going to win that contest.
And I think, you know, going to back to the idea of this being a street fight, I think that works in Dominic's favor. If you are a fan who, you know, doesn't believe that Dominic should be seen as someone who could possibly win this match, I think making it a street fight sort of evens the odds for Dominic as well. And I really like what they've done with the build up here. I know I've had some guest co-hosts who don't believe a Seth Rollins versus Dominic match here was the right move. I do. I think if you're using Dominic the way you're using him as this surrogate for Rey Mysterio, as a guy who's trying to defend his father's honor, then I think it makes all the sense in the world to do a Dominic-Rey Mysterio match, and it makes all the sense in the world to do it in a street fight to not only a street fight fits the feud, given the high tenseness of this and, you know, what Dominic is fighting for. I mean, Rollins pulled Rey's eye out. It helps make fans believe that Dominic could possibly beat Seth Rollins in a street fight atmosphere as opposed to in the ring. And it also helps cover for Dominic's shortcomings as a wrestler. So, you know, this is one of those sort of, and I know not everybody's in love with the Seth Rollins character. I'm hit and miss on it, but this is one of those things that WWE has done a really nice job building to, and a feud and a match that feels like a major fight.
I agree with that point, that they've built it to make this feel like a great fight, but I feel like this has felt like 3 to 6 months of a waste of both Seth Rollins, Rey Mysterio, Dominic, and really everybody in this. I mean, if this is what we're peaking to, this feels like a lot of time that could have been spent in better ways. But nonetheless, storyline or regardless, I do agree. This feels like a primetime fight. You know, and it is one of the great stories. You're going to try to avenge your father and come and you know, take up for him. I mean, it's a great story, but, then the bell has to ring, as they always say. I'm just curious how they get out of this.
Mandy versus Sonya, hair versus hair match, as was established Friday night on SmackDown. This is another feud that's been brewing for quite a while. It took a bit of a detour, and you know, with Mandy and Otis off TV for a few weeks, Sonya the same thing. I'm looking forward to this because I think the feud has been very well done for the most part. And the hair versus hair stipulation is going to add a lot of interest here. I just feel like they maybe missed the apex of this feud, and it may not be WWE's fault. They may not have had everybody available to them to really hit that grand ending to it. But do you think this match has enough interest? And, you know, is it running on fumes, or do you think it's given Sonya's attack on Mandy last week with the scissors and the hair and the promos that they cut this week and just the memory of them as a team and the breakup and how bitter that was? Do you think this still feels like a SummerSlam match?
I do. I do feel like you said, whether it was intentional or not, or what happened, a little bit of the feud, they did take some of the air out of the feud at probably the apex. But I do think this is one of the best feuds that's been going on both right now and in the last few months. I mean, it is a great story. I mean, your friend that's jealous and she thinks she's prettier, you got more advantages and there's jealousy. I mean, it's a great natural story. And I think a hair versus hair match is great. We don't see that very much in the United States, and particularly with ladies. So, I mean, I think it's a really intriguing thing. I think both women could use the victory. So I think it's, once again, it's great, but I think this is, I think I'm really a fan of what Sonya's been doing. And I thought Mandy really brought it the last couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is going to be a match that you're going to see more of a fight atmosphere than a scientific bout too. So I am looking forward to that one. I like both women. Mandy Rose has grown on me. And Sony I've liked for a long time now and think she has a lot of potential. And she just seems to be showing it now over the last few weeks. So hopefully this is a springboard for really both of these women. They've sort of been held back a little bit, if you can call it that, by being in this feud, though. You know, title opportunities have come and gone that they haven't been involved in because they've been so stuck together in this feud. But hopefully they'll both come out the other end looking better for it and have some title opportunities down the line. Speaking of title opportunities, on the Raw women's side, it was made official on Monday, Sasha Banks versus Asuka for the Raw women's title. There's been some shenanigans surrounding Sasha Banks and Asuka, obviously with the way Sasha Banks won the title by countout, and now Asuka getting a little bit of revenge or the opportunity for it here at SummerSlam. The one thing I think we can say for sure, we can't say anything about the finish, but we can say for sure that the match is going to be really good because these two just seem to have real good chemistry in the ring together.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably going to be the best match of the night if it's not Bayley and Asuka, depending on who goes first and who's more fresh. But yeah, this should be an absolute fantastic match. I mean, if Sasha's not one of the best in the world, she's certainly in the discussion along with Asuka. They've built this feud beautifully. It's peaking at the right time. I'm curious how Bayley is going to be involved or not involved, but I'm really, you know, I want to get my popcorn ready and just sit back and watch this. And I hope they give them 20 minutes to really kill it because, you know, the last time Sasha had a 20-minute match and didn't deliver would be the first time.
And that allows us to transition into Bayley versus Asuka for the SmackDown Women's Championship, which will also take place at SummerSlam. And Asuka winning the tri-branded Battle Royal on SmackDown to earn this opportunity. So she's got a lot of momentum on her side. I had a question from someone last week on this show asking about Sasha Banks and Bayley, and while they are entertaining, the fact that they're holding all the titles leaves very little opportunity for some of the other women. And they are taking up a lot of TV time as well. So I got a question about that. And now it's, I'm sure to that person who sent in that question, it's probably even worse now, because instead of two separate title challengers, you have Asuka challenging for two titles. So really, you know, it's a tough situation if you're on the women's roster, because it does kind of feel like, you know, there's very few women taking up a lot of TV time. Now, I also understand that's kind of the story here. The story is, hey, Banks and Bayley have all the titles, and Asuka is going to try to take all the titles from them. So you kind of understand where WWE's booking is coming from, but do you look at something like this and say, wow, this is a real missed opportunity for someone else to get this chance? Or do you think, you know, Bayley, Banks, and Asuka are the cream of the crop. They deserve all this TV time. They deserve these opportunities. And, you know, someone else needs to step up in the same way they've stepped up.
I've wavered on this. I mean, 2 weeks ago, it seemed like they were on about five, or, and when I say they, Sasha and Bayley were on about five or six different segments, and it finally just, at one point, I just said enough, and I wanted to turn it off. It was too much of them. But on the other hand, whether it's been COVID, whether it's been just limited roster or what have you, I do think Bayley and Sasha have been doing, if not the best work, some of the best work of anybody on the roster, and their segments have been entertaining. So I don't think it's fair to just say, well, because they're getting so much time, it's not fair. Well, if they're doing a great job and they're capitalizing, then they should get that time. And Asuka is the most dominant woman they have right now, and they've built it up. So I'm a little split. I mean, it does normally feel like, you know, the championships are the main thing in the women's division, and maybe there's one other feud like we see with Sonya and Mandy, but that's about all the screen time they're allowed. And, you know, that might be a whole different discussion, a whole other podcast, but I don't know that the three women should be penalized because they're doing such great work in this time when, you know, people that can fill TV time are extremely valuable to Vince.
Yeah, and it's not easy. You know, you can count on one hand the number of people who have really stood out in a positive way in this COVID era of no fans. And Bayley and Banks, it was a rough start that first week or two, but they have really taken a hold and taken a handle on how to work entertainingly in this era. So I think they deserve credit for that. Moving on to the U.S. Championship, Apollo Crews versus MVP. So MVP somehow keeps getting title shots. I'm not sure how this works. He keeps losing, but he keeps getting title shots anyway, which is, I mean, one way to look at it is...
title.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Maybe that's all. Other wrestlers need to take a cue from him then. Good way to get title shots. Just introduce a knockoff title, and there you go. The positive is it allows Apollo Crews to keep racking up wins and keep getting over. You know, MVP is sort of Teflon. He's more of a non-wrestler at this point than a wrestler. So I don't think he loses a lot by losing to Apollo Crews here. But what do you think of the faction, the Hurt Business, that MVP has accumulated with Shelton Benjamin and Lashley and with MVP as the mouthpiece?
I really was a big fan of what the work that MVP has been doing. I don't necessarily love what the Hurt Business is. And I just feel like Shelton is such a weak link in it right now because, you know, he's just been defined down for so long and hadn't won a match in so long that it's just, that's a real hurt to the Hurt Business, pun intended. But, I think MVP is doing a great job. And again, we're talking about trying to find people that are, you know, that can fill TV time. I mean, he's done a great job and he has been entertaining, and what he's done for Lashley. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, from where Lashley was in 2019 to where he is now and the year he's had, I mean, that's directly attributable to MVP, but I don't know. I mean, you know, you invent you buy your own title, so you keep getting title defenses. I really, like you said, I mean, MVP seems to be Teflon with how many times he can lose, but I wish they would give Crews a strong victory here and, you know, move him away from MVP and the Hurt Business and have him go have another solid feud. I mean, goodness, give him somebody that can talk on the mic, but and let him have a good feud. I mean, they would be great.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say about Shelton Benjamin that he is obviously the weak link right now in the Hurt business. But I think the important thing is they're putting him with the guys like Lashley and MVP, who are going to raise his profile, certainly better than sitting and catering all week. And it's not, but WWE has to realize it's not just that. It's not just, you can't just thrust someone like Shelton Benjamin into this group and just assume people are going to take him seriously now. I think it's a step toward that, but you still need to have him out there wrestling in really good matches and getting wins. And I think that's where WWE has really dropped the ball on people and their whole, or what seems like their whole wins and losses don't matter mantra. A guy like Shelton could really benefit from racking up a couple big victories over stars to make him seem like more of a fit in the Hurt business, and I hope they give him that opportunity.
I completely agree with you, but it's just there's so many, you know, we're so many smart fans now that when you see somebody like Shelton join a group like that, you just assume he's going to be the one taking the pins and all the
tag teams
and six-man matches. So
that could be it. Although,
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. So.
Yep.
Sorry, I jumped on you a little bit.
No worries. The WWE title is on the line. Drew McIntyre defending against Randy Orton. Really feels kind of like the first serious challenge to Drew McIntyre's WWE title. You always wonder how WWE is going to view McIntyre as champion during this era. They don't have that immediate feedback from fans in the arena to see how well McIntyre is getting over. All they really have are the ratings, and the ratings are not great. So does WWE try to pull a switch here just to create some more interest and to get fans to tune into Raw, even if it's just, you know, this happened all the time in the Monday Night War era, where you do a title change simply just to get viewers to the show. I would hate to see that as the reason that McIntyre's title reign ends, because I think he's done a fantastic job and he can do so much more. But I also don't think we should write off Randy Orton. I think we need to bring him into the conversation and say what a great job he's been doing lately too in his role. And they've cast him, you know, perfectly basically. Randy Orton's problem for a long time is he was miscast as a babyface or miscast as the wrong type of heel. They finally kind of figured out the formula to get Randy Orton to work in the eyes of fans. And so that's a really good sign. But, I mean, how seriously do you think McIntyre's title reign could be in danger here?
A lot more than I thought a month ago.
Yeah.
I mean, when Drew won the title at WrestleMania, I figured he would hold the title until we had fans and back in the arenas. But with the way the product feels right now, it feels a little stale. The ratings are certainly showing that. And the way they've built Randy, I feel like there's a lot more, the next step with Randy, there's a lot more meat on that bone than what is the next step with Drew if he wins here. I just, I don't know what the next step is if Drew wins. I mean, who's his next challenger and where does he go from here? He's beaten most everybody else.
Yeah.
I feel like with Randy, there's some baby faces to chase him and you can always have the legends come after him and he can go after legends at the same time. And I feel like there's a lot more stories to be told if Randy wins, which leads me to believe that there's definitely a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the stories that are told are, you know, that could be if all things are equal and you feel like one person as champion has more stories, you have more stories to exploit than as the other person as champion, that could win the day. So we'll have to see on that one. The final match that we'll talk about for SummerSlam, Braun Strowman versus The Fiend, Universal Championship. I got two emails on this topic, so we're going to let that kind of guide our discussion. The first email is another one from Jack. He says, "Hey, Greg, hope you are safe and well. Got two different topics for you tonight. First off, I just finished watching SmackDown and was thinking about the Universal Championship match at SummerSlam. On the surface, who should we be rooting for? Braun just threw Alexa and has been terrible to her. The Fiend has attacked Alexa and done terrible things. If we delve a bit deeper into the story, I think Braun still likes Alexa, and by showing he has no affection for her and almost disdain for her is stopping the Fiend from hurting Alexa. So really, Braun is still the face and trying to protect Alexa. I think at SummerSlam, Braun will lose the title, and Alexa will play into the finish and almost turn to the dark side and join the Fiend, be the Harley Quinn to the Fiend's Joker, and not realize that Braun has tried to protect her throughout. How do you think the match plays out? Oh my goodness, there could be 150 directions this match plays out, because the Fiend, his possibilities of booking are limitless. And that's both a very good thing and a very bad thing. And we've seen both of them over the last several months. So, I guess just to get to the root of Jack's question, who should we be rooting for here? Is Braun coming off as strongly a heel in this build-up as Jack makes it out in his email?
The end of SmackDown Friday night left me completely confused. I'm glad he brought it up, because I'm kind of led to believe that they're almost trying to do a double turn. I mean, they're trying to make the Fiend the good guy, and they're trying to make Braun a heel at this point. I mean, the maniacal laughing really made no sense to me, and dumping, you know, Alexa, and whether or not he did, I know the lights went out, but I'm really left kind of wondering where this is going. I mean, is it like he says, is this, I'm left very confused. I don't know where they're going with this. As you said, there are 150 different ways to go. I think Alexa's going to be involved in the finish, and I think the Fiend wins, because I think there's more stories, frankly, again, to tell down the road than with Braun. But I do think Braun maybe needs to be a heel. I think he's more, there's more to him as a heel than he is a babyface. So maybe that's where they're going.
And I think Braun loses here. I've not been impressed with his title reign, and part of that is WWE is changing his character to a point that it no longer resembles the same character that got over in the first place. Part of it is he just hasn't had the challengers to make his reign seem like a big deal, I guess. And I think it's important to note, too, that we have one episode of SmackDown left before SummerSlam. So WWE could really explain things that happened on Friday on this upcoming episode and steer Braun Strowman back to more of a babyface than he appeared to be at the end of SmackDown this week. I kind of take it as more, you know, this is the first time we've seen Braun Strowman in the flesh since he drowned in that match with Bray Wyatt. So I kind of think something happened psychologically to him there. And it's going to take him a while to get back to that babyface character. And maybe, you know, maybe Jack's onto something, that really what he's doing is trying to protect Alexa by telling the Fiend that he doesn't care about her, hoping that, you know, he'll leave Bliss alone if he thinks that. So, yeah, a lot of different ways this could go, for sure. The other email that we got on this topic is from Eli. He says, after this past SmackDown, are we supposed to think that Braun Strowman is now a healer face? Oh, I didn't read that ahead of time. He sent that in during the show, so I didn't get a chance to look that over. So it's the same question. But I think that just speaks to...
Well, I agree with him.
Yeah, I think that speaks to the confusion that fans have about what we saw at the end of SmackDown, and I'm sure WWE is banking on that confusion leading to a lot of fans to tune into SmackDown this Friday to say, you know, let's see if we do get any clarity on that. Let's see if Braun does explain why he did what he did, why he said what he did. Do you agree with Jack? Do you think Alexa plays a part in the finish of the match at SummerSlam?
I think she has to. In one way, shape, or form, I think she has to. I mean, it makes too much sense. And with the interview this weekend and then slapping the, you know what, out of Braun at the show. I mean, I don't know how. I don't know if she's Sister Abigail. I don't know if she's, you know, going to be on Braun's side the whole time. She has to be somehow involved in this finish.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Again, one more SmackDown between now in SummerSlam, so maybe some more clarity on that then. We've reached the top of the hour, so I want to kind of reset things here a little bit. This is Wrestling Night in America for August 16th, 2020. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com contributor Ryan Sullivan here, previewing TakeOver, SummerSlam, taking your phone calls, taking your emails. And phone calls is where we go next. It's the 478 area code. It is Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to the show this week. What's on your mind tonight?
How you doing? How y'all guys doing today? Not too much. Been listening to what you guys been talking about.
Yep.
Okay, my first question for you guys would be, I want to ask about go back to TakeOver real fast. Mm-hmm. With what's going on in with the ladder match and saying who the two participants coming in are, if it's out of those two matches, who do you guys got winning that match, and who would you guys like to see win that match? Myself, I like to see Cameron Grimes win it. They already kind of set up a way that he wins it, and he will have two challenges with Thick Boy and Damian Priest coming out to him for that title, and it just give a different feel and new players on the card. Who do you guys see? Who do you guys like?
Yeah, Grimes would be a total 180 from Keith Lee and his title reign. I mean, just different in almost every way. You know, I kind of like Damian Priest. I would like to see him get that opportunity. I think that he's sort of been undercut a little bit since his babyface turn, and I think this would heat him up a little bit. But you've got a lot of these same type of brooding, dark characters in NXT, so Priest doesn't really stand out in that department the same way that Cameron Grimes stands out in the character department. I think it's a little too soon for Bronson Reed, and then, of course, you've got the other two wrestlers who will be in this match, either Johnny Gargano or Ridge Holland, and then either Finn Balor or Velveteen Dream. But Ryan, who would you like to see win this match?
If it were me, I'd like to see Bronson Reed. I'd like to see them go and give him the full push. I mean, I was a big fan of his work on the indie scene and in PWG, and I think that he's got a unique look. I think he can really move for a big guy. I think that there's something there, and I'd like to give him the push here and see if he can, you know, take the ball and run with it. I think that Damian Priest is maybe a little above this, and I haven't loved his babyface run, as we alluded to earlier, and I think Cameron Grimes doesn't need the title right now. I think he can build himself a little longer, but like I said, I'd like to see them just go all in with Bronson Reed and see what a championship run from him looks like.
Darrell, your second question for us tonight.
Okay, my second question would be, I know you guys were debating on who will win between Randy and Drew McIntyre, but if either one of those people win, who would be their next challenger?
That's always the tough thing, you know, because the top of the roster on Raw doesn't seem all that strong. You know, I've said this before, I wouldn't be afraid to go back to Seth Rollins if Drew McIntyre wins. I still think there's a lot there that they can meet out as far as these guys feuding, especially if Rollins disposes of Dominic in convincing fashion. I think that could earn him a shot there. You know, if Randy Orton wins, I think Drew McIntyre is certainly entitled to a rematch, given how dominant he's been as a champion. But, you know, when you look at the top of the babyface card, you know, Rey Mysterio, does he come back and somehow jump over a follow-up or with Seth Rollins and jump into a feud with Randy Orton? Given Orton's penchant for taking out legends, Rey Mysterio would fit in that umbrella. Do you look at maybe elevating a guy like Aleister Black, who really hasn't had much to do since since Paul Heyman was relieved of his duties as head of Raw Creative? Do you look at a guy like Samoa Joe if he's ready to step into the fold again from an in-ring point of view? Kevin Owens is a possibility. So, Ryan, you've got a lot of guys who are sort of in that upper mid-card. They've already established themselves in the past as title contenders, even if they're not portrayed as such now. But you don't have other guys at the real top of the card who just make so much sense as a challenger.
Well, and to your point, it does feel strange that we can't figure out who the next contender is. It's normally we can point to, I mean, for a while we were saying, okay, it's going to be Randy at SummerSlam. And we will point to other guys like, okay, they're building them up for this. It's all those names you said, you know, Seth has been kind of floundering in this feud a little bit. Kevin Owens is, had a really rough run since SummerSlam. Yeah, Bobby Lashley, I mean, they've done that already. Rey Mysterio feels underwhelming. I don't know. I mean, I think that, like you said, the Rey Mysterio, if Randy Orton's going with the Legend Killer thing, that makes sense. But there certainly doesn't feel like a natural person that's the next the next challenger type person.
Yeah. Darrell, did we miss anybody?
No, not really. If they wouldn't have did what they did with Kevin Owens, could have him come up next. But that's why I'm not too sure about them. And, like, with this group, whatever they call them, Fake Antifa group or whatever, which I don't trust them with this type of stuff anyway. If you can barely build up the next contender for either of your challengers, because you having that hard problem with both main titles, the IC title, and the United States title. If you can barely build up challenges for those titles, how can I honestly think that you can build up anybody out of a faction who you got to focus on many people to maybe build up? So I think it's time for them to stop all these gimmicks and get back to telling stories and building guys. Now, with that being said, you guys were talking about the women's title. And one thing that I like about this Friday, with that over-the-top battle, Rumble type of match that they had, was with the four people that they had in the ring. And I found it interesting. If WWE was, if Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn and Bruce Prichard was really on top of their game, you have four women who you can use to build, because it seemed like they're still teasing and trying to hold off. That's why we haven't really seen them touch too much on this Asuka versus Shayna Baszler matchup that they look like they could, but I may be giving them too much props potentially to be building up to as the next big match. Mm-hmm. But you could have had two, even because right now Tegan Knox is not really needed on NXT. You can move her up and Bianca Belair, you could take her out of that Street Profit situation and put her on the singles and use those as two up and comers. You got the Bayley and Sasha thing, which looks like it could be up because they have Payback coming up. The week after this weekend that's coming up. So it looked like either they'll be retaining all their titles or losing all those titles. Our pay-per-view after each other. So my thing is, do you use this, even though you got Asuka challenging for both titles, do you use this as a way to separate? Maybe she don't win, she win the SmackDown title from Bayley first, and that's the first match, and they replace her in the second match with somebody like a Shayna Baszler, and she wins the Raw. And then I guess Nick on that Payback pay-per-view, that's when you have the tag team titles off of Bayley, and you can start their two rivalries right there. Do you see them maybe trying to do something like that and use those final four people, which was Shayna, Asuka, Bianca Belair, and Tegan Knox, and use those two people as up-and-coming challenges for those girls, while you also have a big rivalry of two known stars, of Sasha and Becky, going against each other to the Rumble or something like that? Would you guys do that, or are you seeing something else in the picture?
I don't get a sense that WWE is ready to jump off the Bayley and Banks bandwagon. I think there's a possibility that one of them could lose their title to Asuka at SummerSlam. You know, I could envision a scenario where she wins the title in the first match and then Bayley and Banks beat her down viciously after the match so that she comes out basically already defeated in the second match. That's kind of my thinking on it. WWE, you know, they've got Shayna Baszler, they've got Bianca Belair, they've got some women in NXT who have the ability to perform at a very high level, main roster-wise. But, again, and it's something we talked about earlier, Ryan, you know, right now that television time and title feuds are being dominated by basically three women, Asuka, Sasha Banks, and Bayley. So what do you think about Durrell's scenario? I mean, do you see SummerSlam and Payback being used by WWE to sort of unravel the Banks, Bayley, you know, their ownership of the titles at this point?
I hope so, but no, unfortunately I don't. I think that, you know, the way that Sasha and Bayley are going right now is they're really doing good work and they're filling the TV time. So I'd love to see more Bianca Belair and I'd love to see a lot more Shayna Baszler as the new challengers. And, you know, as Darrell said, the up and comers, but I wish I had more faith in them building them. I mean, like Bianca is in this, you know, bad feud with the Street Profits and Zelina Vega, and Shayna was off TV for, you know, a bunch of weeks, and I thought she was in a feud with Nia, and I don't know what happened to that. So I wish that I could say that I thought so, but I think Greg, you nailed it. I think that maybe Bayley loses in the first match to Asuka. Sasha somehow tried to interfere. It didn't work, and then they beat Asuka down, you know, so that Sasha has an easy road to victory later in the night. I mean, I think that's the way they go, but I hope that they do something a little more creative than that.
Darrell, as always, thank you for the call tonight, and I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Let's switch gears and talk a little AEW before we wrap up for the evening. The only match announced so far for All Out on September 5th is Jon Moxley versus MJF for the AEW Championship. And this brings us to another email question. This one is from Chris from Reading, Pennsylvania. He says, based on what you know of the cards, which of SummerSlam or AEW All Out has the better build and will have the better overall show? Well, it's a little too early to say. Oh, and he says go VIP, by the way, pwtorch.com/goVIP. I can't forget that. Can't forget to get my plugs in. It's hard to say about All Out since there's only one match announced so far. Even with that, I think it's probably a safe bet given recent history to say that AEW is going to be the better show, not knowing what they're going to put on there. But, you know, since the build is part of the question that Chris threw out there, what do you think of the build to Moxley versus MJF? What do you think about MJF using this campaign format to try to get under the skin or rile up Jon Moxley?
I think MJF is doing a lot with a very bland and kind of not much. I mean, he's making a lot out of nothing with this. I mean, the whole thing seems very ridiculous, but I get that this is going to get under Moxley's skin, and he's doing it, and he's just kind of pressing and pressing and pressing, and that's who MJF is. So I've liked the build, but I haven't really liked what the build has been all about necessarily, but I think he's making, you know, chicken salad out of, well, we can, you know, fill that in. So, I think MJF is doing a nice job with what he's been given right now to build this feud.
This past week on Dynamite, I had really strong feelings on two finishes, and I was happy to see one, and I was a little not so happy to see the other. The first was Cody versus Scorpio Sky for the TNT Championship. I thought it was a real opportunity to put Scorpio Sky over, give him the victory, and you know, give him some momentum, because he's a guy that I think is underutilized right now in AEW. You know, you could argue there's a long list of underutilized men and women in AEW just by the nature of having 1 2-hour show per week, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought, you know, Cody sort of getting this bigger ego as his TNT run has gone on, the entourage that he had with him this week and all that, I thought it would have popped that balloon a little bit as well. But I get, you know, Cody continuing to win and continuing to win. I just wish that Scorpio had been saved for the eventual Cody title loss. And the other finish I really felt strongly about was Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho. I thought Orange Cassidy should really go over. And, you know, that's not something I advocate a lot, is having you know, a top star like Jericho lose or anything like that. But, you know, the way they did it and having Orange Cassidy win after all the ringer that Jericho had put him through, I thought that was the right call. And I was glad to see AEW do it. It takes a lot of balls to have a finish like that, you know, even with no title on the line. But what do you think about those two matches and, you know, the scenarios that I laid out? I mean, did you think the right guy went over, or were you closer aligned with what I thought?
I was pretty much, and I hate to just, you know, listen, you know, be in agreement with you, but it doesn't make it as interesting. But I totally agree.
It's all right, Ryan. That's how you get on the show again next time.
Oh, okay. Then you're totally right.
That's the secret.
But I completely I agreed with you. I mean, I know they tried to keep Scorpius Sky strong, and I've been a long-time fan of his, you know, from the California Indies, and obviously from his work in Ring of Honor. I mean, I think he's really one of the most, you know, underutilized guys out there. I mean, he can cut a promo. He's a great athlete. He can really go in the ring. And I would like to see him, and I'd like to see that TNT title used for some of those guys that are a little more underappreciated on their roster. I get keeping it on Cody for the time being, so I understood it, and I liked them keeping him strong. I loved him kicking down the door as his entrance. I thought that was fantastic. So I'm like you. I wish maybe they had waited 2 or 3 more weeks for Scorpio and given them the victory at All Out, if that's where they're going. But I understood it. I agreed with you in the finish of the Orange Cassidy match. I think he had to get the victory to keep this feud going and to give him that legitimacy. He had lost too many times, and I don't know where you go if Chris won there. I think this feud has some more legs to it. I think they need to keep it going a little farther, and giving him the victory there allows this to keep going and keeps some interest going. So I wouldn't like it if Jericho was holding the title still. This would feel a little too hokey, but I think in the position he's in right now, and they're cooling off the Inner Circle a little bit, I thought it was a really good move, and I think it's giving them probably a nice rematch in a couple of weeks.
A couple more emails to clean out the inbox before we get to ROH. We had a question about Payback from Roy from California. He says, hello, Greg, and guest of the week. Two questions. First, why is WWE having Payback 2 weeks after SummerSlam? Doesn't seem like enough time to build somewhat of a decent card outside of rematches. Well, I think if you look at the name of the show, it's Payback. So to me, that says rematches from SummerSlam. I don't know for sure that that's going to be the case, but it is really odd timing. I don't know if this is an experiment from WWE's side or what, but it's not like they have a lot of feuds going on that they just could not get onto the SummerSlam card, that they said, okay, you know, we'll just use an extra week of hype and then put them on the Payback card a week later. So I'm not sure why they did it this way. You know, they're really in control for the most part, given that the WWE Network is where most people watch these pay-per-views, and they have full control over that. But is there anything you think to read into WWE scheduling of Payback coming right after SummerSlam?
No, I find it very strange, and I was going to ask you the same question, or I would write into Wade and ask if there was some reason. It feels like almost, you know, a mistake on the calendar for some reason. But like you alluded to with Payback, I assume we're going to see basically the same SummerSlam card just run back 2 weeks later with maybe a couple of different stiffs or a couple of different, you know, scenarios to the matches. But 2 weeks isn't enough time to build it, so I think it's strange. I mean, more wrestling is great. I like watching wrestling on weekend, so it's great. But in that respect, I don't know why they would why it's 2 weeks later, but you know, in these day and age right now, any entertainment is great. So I'll give it a shot.
Sure. And the other question is about Raw Underground. He says, this emailer says, good evening, Greg. I'm a huge fan of your show. I always enjoy listening to your insightful discussions every Monday morning. While I believe that WWE Creative should be praised for taking a risk by introducing their mass audience to a, while not original, at least different visual language with which to present their simulated fights, I wanted to know your opinion as on the recent comments made by Lance Storm regarding Raw Underground. Do you agree that the contrast between traditional pro wrestling and the more shoot-style format presented in what could be viewed as a grittier, more realistic environment would inevitably do harm to a superstar's credibility with the audience, unless the talent has helped to remain unique by splitting off Shane's wrestlers on Underground into a separate roster? Personally, not only do I see this as a smart decision going forward, I could also see a potential storyline connection between Underground and Retribution that gives both of these rating stunts that desperately needed sense of purpose they sorely lack. Thank you for providing your audience with this great weekly outlet. It is truly appreciated. Tim, VIP member from Virginia Beach. Thank you, Tim, for the kind words. Appreciate it. Virginia Beach is a place I almost ended up moving to before I moved down here to Naples in Florida. My girlfriend at the time was looking for a teaching job, and she had applied to Virginia Beach and Collier County here in Florida. She got offered the job in Virginia Beach first, so we had already kind of started planning a move to Virginia Beach until, you know, we had a friend who was down here in Naples, and she said, well, why don't you apply down here? And she did. She got the job, and she took that one, so I ended up down here too. And so I was very close to being in Virginia Beach, but I digress. Raw Underground, and I think this is the same – it sounds like the same issue that I had and I talked about a week and a half ago now on the Tuesday Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast with Wade, was about how do you explain to the audience, or how do you intend the audience to take it when you are presenting something as real? Doesn't that inherently present your other thing as not real? And doesn't it expose what's happening in the ring as not real, even if it's unsaid? So that's difficult for me. And I think maybe by having the pro wrestlers be a part of Raw Underground has sort of made that a little more seamless than it otherwise would be. But I look at Raw Underground a lot of the same way I look at Retribution is – if WWE doesn't create a major star coming out of this concept, then it was a failure. Because WWE is in desperate need of major stars, and when you have the opportunity that these two sort of out there concepts give you, you have to take advantage of that. So what's been your impression of Raw Underground, and how do you as a viewer kind of see the Raw Underground fighting versus the pro wrestling?
You know, I feel bad because I say all the time, I want something new. I want something new. You know, I talked to Bronson Reed earlier. I want something new. This makes no sense to me. And it's just such a massive miss. One, I'm not an MMA fan. It's just no judging. I'm just not. So that's not really, I'm not the target audience for one. But to your point, I don't know how you can try to have, you know, a wrestler using the same moves in Raw Underground that they use in their regular matches, Dolph Ziggler and Eric or Ivar. I always get them confused with the Viking Raiders, was basically doing the same moves in Underground that they do in their regular Raw matches. But Somehow they're knocking a guy out in 45 seconds in Underground, and their matches are going 8 minutes on Raw. To your point though, if this doesn't create some kind of star or stars or elevate, you know, mid-carders to challengers in some way, shape or form, then this is just a massive miss because I don't know what is getting accomplished by this otherwise. It feels like you're just trying to do, like you're trying to have some kind of a fight club in the middle of your wrestling show. And it feels out of place to me, but, I will give it a shot. I mean, I liked it better the second week than I liked it the first week. And there's a long way to go, but I'm very skeptical, you know, a couple of weeks in.
And we'll finish up with Ring of Honor. Two big pieces of news came out this week, so it's prescient, Ryan, that we have you here on Sunday night to discuss them. It's been reported that Marty Scurll is out as Booker, Delirious, Hunter Johnston back in. Of course, Marty Scurll was swept up in the speaking out allegations. Sinclair / ROH had put out a statement that they were investigating. That was probably 6 weeks ago now. We haven't really heard anything more about that investigation, but the fact that he has been moved out of his position as Booker is probably pretty significant. What do you think about that decision? What changes would you expect us to see with Delirious back in charge? And do you think we see Marty Scurll ever return, even as a wrestler, to Ring of Honor?
I think they were in a bad situation with him as the booker. I mean, you know, you can't have him not book female talent. I mean, if you're the booker, you got to book everybody. And with what went on, you know, I think everybody that's listening to this knows, so I don't need to get into it. But it would be very difficult for him to be in charge of a locker room with female talent and trying to book them as well, and just the possibilities of what could come up. So I think he had to get moved out of the position. Unfortunately, I mean, I thought he had only been booking for about a month, before we got quarantined and shut down. And I thought, you know, the Free Enterprise event was very well done and very well booked. And, they were really in a good position pointing towards 2020. So it's disappointing. I would be surprised if we don't see another new booker here in the next few months. I mean, Delirious was moved out because he had the job for a long time, and I think he was looking for maybe not, you know, completely less responsibility, but more help in the position and another, you know, a fresh angle and a fresh approach. So I'd be very surprised if we don't see a new booker in the next few months. But I think, you know, Hunter's pretty consistent. You know what you're
going to get from him, for
better or for worse. And obviously it helps that they had capable hands that they could give it back to. But I'm disappointed. I mean, I was looking forward to what Marty could do and his, you know, fresh approach. And obviously he's incredibly creative with his own character. I wanted to see what he could do with the company. So it's not a good thing. Obviously it's a bummer all the way around. And to your point, I don't know what's going to happen if he can be in the company or not.
60 seconds.
I think that it's going to be a little bit before we see him. I'd be surprised if even aside from just travel and those issues, I'd be surprised if we saw him at these tapings. I think it needs to let some more time, you know, heal wounds and figure out exactly what happened and where they want to go. So I would say that I would guess that we will see Marty back in the company, but I think it'll probably be a little further down the road.
The other bit of news from Ring of Honor this week is that they will resume TV tapings in Maryland later this month. What do you expect to see coming out of these tapings? Do you expect to see them sort of pick up where they left off? Do you expect to see them try to get the attention of the fans, the wrestling fans, by doing something big in some of these first tapings? What's your expectation for their resumption of tapings here?
I expect them to really try to establish the pure title. That's where the company was going right when the Free Enterprise and everything, the March events were shut down. That was really where they were headed, is reestablishing the pure title and having that tournament. And I think considering the limitations because of quarantine they're going to have in Baltimore and just travel restrictions and everything else, I think we're going to see a very small roster, as few wrestlers as we can see. And I think that a round robin tournament or an 8-man type elimination pure title tournament could fill a lot of TV time without having a lot of wrestlers interacting with too many people, and you can kind of quarantine them as well. So I think that's what we'll see, at least in the early going. I also expect that, you know, some of their Hispanic champions like Rush and Dragon Lee and the Mexibloods, you know, will probably have some difficulty traveling and stuff. So I would think that maybe they won't be around the first tapings or two as well.
Alrighty, Ryan, we almost hit it right on the head. 91 minutes when we're scheduled for 90, and we've gone a lot longer the last few weeks. So appreciate you joining me this week on Wrestling Night in America. Before I let you go, I'll let you plug your social media where fans can follow you there, as well as what you do for the Torch.
Oh, well, thank you. And, Greg, thank you so much for this invite. It was so much fun. I love talking wrestling, and the callers were great, and the emailers as well. So thank you. I am Ryan Sullivan at Ryan Sullivan MLB on Twitter. I do the Podcast of Honor show for PW Torch at Podcast of Honor. If you want to reach out, it's me and my co-host Tyler Sage. We talk about Ring of Honor exclusively. Unfortunately, since the quarantine, we've haven't had a lot of live wrestling to talk about, so we've become more of an interactive interview show, having a lot of the Ring of Honor talent join us each week and getting to know them on more of a personal basis and their story and how they got to Ring of Honor. So if you like hearing interviews with wrestlers, you like Ring of Honor, or you're just looking to add another show to your PW Torch VIP repertoire, give us a shot at Podcast of Honor. And again, thank you. So please go VIP. If you're listening to this, I guess you probably are, but go VIP, stay VIP, continue. And again, Greg, and thank you for the chance. And Wade, thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. We'll have you on again soon, Ryan. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And before we head out, we'll have one more email question for you. This is from Eli. He says, do you think the way NJPW pushes or debuts big heels is becoming outdated or overused? Specifically, I'm thinking of unveiling them as the new leader of Bullet Club. Finn Balor started Bullet Club, AJ Styles, new leader, Kenny Omega, new leader, Cody fighting for leadership, Jay White, new leader, Kenta, not a leader, but a major player, and now evil. It seems putting a guy in Bullet Club will be enough, but is it? I think we're going to get that question answered with how evil is received. And because, you know, all of those people that Eli mentioned in that email were very successful in that role. So it's understandable why New Japan kept going back to that well to introduce new or big heels. Evil, I think, has the potential to sort of stop that momentum in its tracks. So if evil doesn't work out, they may decide to take a different tact in introducing new heels. But I think the thing that you also have to remember is New Japan is very, very heavily a group organization where there are a lot of groups, whether it's Chaos, whether it's, LIJ, whether it's Bullet Club. So more than any other promotion, New Japan relies heavily on stables, so it makes sense that there would be leadership changes in those stables, that someone would rise to the top, there would be battles for leadership in those stables that would either introduce a character or spur a turn one way or the other. So I think it's just the nature of New Japan itself is it's very stable friendly. So when you have that many groups, many of the top stars are going to be associated either loosely or tightly with a group, and that's what you get. But, you know, keep an eye on Evil and how well he does as a Bullet Club member. And if it doesn't take, we may see, you know, New Japan decide, okay, maybe this means we've gone to this well too often. Maybe we need to try something different next time. We're out of emails, we're out of phone calls, we are out of time. Thank you for joining us this week, everybody, and thank you for listening. Don't forget SummerSlam next Sunday. We'll go on the air right after that. Payback the week after. Again, we'll go on the air right after that. So I hope you join us for that. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. I'll talk to you next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.